Ja. Kväll nummer 8 eller den 27 augusti 1981. Kväll med Rut Dennison, Ljusbacken.
Night before yesterday, we talked about the fourth noble truth of the Buddha. Remember? It was the truth of his teachings, of his guidelines. But for us to walk, if we want to come to our high, to live our highest potential as a human being, that was the fourth noble truth. Tonight, I want to look with you into the other noble truth. There is the first one. Here and there we already mentioned, and especially the old students of Vipassana have heard or remember, that the first noble truth of the Buddhist enlightenment talks about suffering. In his language, it is dukkha. That is all that what is unsatisfactory, what is painful, what is bringing sorrow and suffering to us. I don't think we can deny this truth. There is really so much suffering in this world. Just this very moment, thousands, if not millions of people suffer just on very basic levels, have not enough food, have not enough medical care, have not care of beloved ones or close friends, are alone, have maybe not enough warmth, enough means to keep themselves warm. This very moment so many people die. This very moment so many people get born. All that is suffering. This very moment it is going on. We just need also to think of all those who are imprisoned right this moment who suffer from brutality, from dominance of other people. Who suffer from ill treatment, who suffer in this imprisonment, perhaps that they are there for maybe no reason at all, for out of misunderstanding. It is so much suffering going on this moment. If we just allow ourselves to feel it. You see, the Buddha said, this all goes on, not because we create it, that we do too. But because the physical body itself is bringing this about. The suffering is within our body. Being born, being a human being, not being enlightened, lives in a condition which is ignorance, and which creates suffering. The human body is comprised, I think we mentioned, of all those elements which comprise the entire universe. And we are not quite aware of the enormous power of these elements, because there is a time of balance of these elements within ourselves, and after a while they follow their natural characteristic, and that is destruction, and of this we are not aware. And not really being aware of this causes us enormous suffering. So the seed of suffering is built in our constitution. The destruction which is inherent in our elements, we are not quite aware of it, and when it becomes apparent as we go along through sickness or through old age or through death, we are in great suffering. But there are other pains, other sufferings, those of the mind, the depression, the hatred we have, all forms of anger and aversion. The frustration, the sorrow, the unpleasantness we are feeling within ourselves. That daily deep feeling of boredom which we in which we suffer. That is a great completion in us, a great form of suffering. Also, don't we know how to handle it? also do we create more in through our unfolding. And it sometimes feels like we live like children in a house which is surrounded by fire. Children who play inside, being not aware of the danger. In this way, it feels sometimes that we human beings live, not being aware of basic of this destructive or inherent force of suffering. And so it is to know this and to look deeper into it is no need or is no use to pretend that suffering isn't there. It is there. We just need to look at it. We burn with anger. We burn with desire. And these fires in us create the suffering. That is the first, the truth of the first truth of Buddha's enlightenment. Suffering. Dukkha. But the Buddha didn't stand here still. He pointed straight out the cause of suffering. Just plainly did he call our attention that what binds us to this wheel of suffering or samsara is our bondage, our imprisonment in our own minds. Bondage is a kind of to take as attachments. And these force of attachments, this force of grasping and attaching, that is the cause of our suffering. And remember, it is said it is in our minds. It is not outside of us. Now let us see what kind of attachments are there. Four great attachments we should see. The first one is the one to sense pleasure. Always this seeking for momentary pleasures or good feelings. We are enormously attracted to this and enormously pulled by this force. Each of our senses is in constant action to satisfy this pulling force. So is the ear constantly out for good sounds. The tongue constantly directs itself toward delicious food. The eye constantly moves out for seeing nice things. The body is in constant craving for feeling good, for having pleasant feelings. It is an endless cycle or movement of wanting to have this desire gratified as soon as it arises. not knowing that the nature of this force of tanha, we can even call it tanha, that is that force which reaches out and attaches itself, is the nature of this force is not to be satisfied. So we are living by that a very a striving after momentary pleasures. We live for 1 week of holiday. We live and look forward for the next good relationship. We hope for another child. It might bring some happiness. We hope for a new flat. We are hoping for some change from outside constantly. And so we are waiting some living, I feel, in such a state, as so the happiness is just always a little bit out of our reach. Just a little bit. So we are always behind the real experience. To see this really, we may not feel we do that, but at closer a look and deeper understanding and observation of our mental activities, we will find that we belong to this these kinds of unfolding too. Some have it more heavier and more obvious, crave and search after more greater things which are maybe more obvious. But on a finer level, the craving continues when we have stopped maybe a little bit the craving on the material levels. There is a nice story given or an example by a wise by the Sufis. The saint or the wise man Mullah Nasruddin, he had a way through some comical action sometimes to let us know how, or to demonstrate sometimes a particular tendency of ourselves. So Mullah Nasruddin goes to town and sees very good looking green peppers, red peppers, the little long ones, and he buys quite a bunch of them and goes home and sits down in his place and begins to eat one after the other. And as he proceeds, the tears out of his eyes are streaming. His nose is distorting in different shape. Out of his mouth, it is running the saliva because of the sharpness of the taste of these peppers. There comes the student and says, "Oh, hello, Mula, what are you doing? Why are you eating all these?" He said, "Well, I am waiting for a sweet one." So, that's the answer. The second attachment of which keeps us to the round of samsara, which is the cause of our suffering, is the attachment and the craving for the insistence to what we may say our ideas and our views. When we are filled with our own ideas, which are mixed and conditioned, not clear wisdom energy, every of our experience and everything we hear, we are receiving through these conditionings. So that is to say, everything what comes in as our experience gets filtered and colored by these glasses of conditioning. So then we have new ideas, not clear ones, not wisdom ideas. And then we add more and we collect more, because the force of attachment, the force of desire is accumulating. So we continue accumulating ideas, and then the force of attachment does not let them go. We have them. They have us at the time, at the end. So, that of course keeps us from really seeing how things are, how simple they are, how pure they are, how real, how factual. There is a very famous great master in Thailand who was asked by one of his students, or maybe who had many Western students. He was asked, what feature did you observe, especially with your Western students? And he said, well, their greatest obstacle and their greatest feature and strongest tendency is holding on to their own ideas, asserting them, insisting to push them through as though they were the truth. That constant asserting of their ideas is, he said, what keeps them away from really trusting and losing their doubts, of really letting themselves fall into the chance of experiencing. It is like, you see, like a cup in which there is stale water, old water, or a container. And in order to use this container, we would have to empty it from the old water. Unless we empty it, it is not useful for anything else. In the same way, unless we empty our minds from all conditioned ideas, it is not useful. It is not a useful tool for coming to the last evolution of yourself, coming to realize yourself. We will tie ourselves closer to ignorance in this way. And the third attachment as a reason for our suffering is that belief that rituals, ceremonies, reading or reads will bring a change about in me, will come to my, will bring me to wisdom and to maybe realize myself. That can go so far that we are even taking the practice as something to attach ourselves to it and make it a very righteous and special thing. So strong, and I see it again and again this happening, can we attach ourselves to the preciousness of the practice or the technique that we forget to practice it, that it becomes an idea in our head. No, some rituals may be nice if you have the right attitude to it, if you take it as an enhancement to my atmosphere, as a reminder for for my practice, as an attraction for my practice, or an assistant. But if we take these symbols of this or the ceremonies, burning an incense and lighting the candles and building an altar, as a thing in itself, as so that is a thing which will lead me to self-knowledge, is wrong. It's an attachment and keeps us away from the real unfolding here, keeps us in our ignorance, in our bondage of attachment. Now, the fourth attachment is one of the very subtle nature, however it is the most deep, deepest, or the most deep conditioned one. That is that belief that there in us is living an entity or something, an I, or if a me, some factor which is permanent and which governs this whole thing, this mind-body process. That is to say, it is this fourth attachment is the absence of the knowledge that this is a mind process which is in constant flux, interacting, where there is no entity governing the whole thing. And because of this absence of this knowledge, we are that there is no entity, no permanent faculty in us who determines everything. We are getting involved in all kinds of unwholesome actions. We get involved to these deeds of to these unwholesome deeds in such a way where we are motivated and pushed by greed and by hatred. These greed and hatred and the delusion, the ignorance, are the three roots of all unwholesome, immoral actions. And when there is no knowledge and no understanding and awareness, we are mostly governed by these forces of the mind. Yeah, This attachment to this idea of I is so strong that we lead a life where we have everything related to this ego-centered, to this I center, and begin, when it becomes so strong, that we begin to isolate ourselves from the world around us. That is another way of tying ourselves deeper to the ignorance and to that mass of pain. Very unfortunate is that people don't know. I would say, if they would know that the widening of the heart and the breaking through this ego-centeredness in ourselves, the loosening of these attachments, really reduce our suffering, weaken these states of pain and sorrow, of depression and whatever we may call it. It's hard to see that, but it really is so. Then the second noble truth. So this is the second noble truth of Buddha's enlightenment, the cause of suffering, attachment, four forms of attachment. The attachment to sense desire, the attachment to the practice itself, to the forms and rituals, the attachment to the ideas and views, and the attachment to the belief of self. And to realize that there is nothing here outside of us which does this attachment bring about is important, is perhaps the thing which would loosen us from this attachment, just to realize it, that the force of this attachment is within us. Actually, we are that because of of this constitution we are. There is a good example given in the scriptures, I recall, to demonstrate this force of attachment. There is a monkey trap in form of a coconut, of the outer shell, and it is fastened, and there is one slit made, and big enough to let the hand of the monkey, the open hand, go through, but it has is not big enough to pull a fist back, a closed hand. So when the monkey comes and smells the sweet item, the sweet food in that coconut, he naturally, by the force of desire, reaches into it. He is that clever. But he is not that smart to bring it back, because the force of desire and the force of attachment to the food, to the object of desire, hold him now in prison, because he doesn't realize now, when he pulls back, he doesn't realize that. And he is so attached to the food in his hand that he stays a prisoner. And when the hunters come, or the catchers come, he gets excited, he probably is in tremendous fear and panic, but he cannot get loose, he cannot let go. And so he becomes a prisoner. They catch him. Would he know that if he would have, he just needs to open the hand and let go of the desired item, he could let his hand, lead his hand through the slit and be free. So what keeps him in? The force of attachment, the force of desire. And where is it? In himself. What would he need to become free? The realization of it. In the same way to us. If we realize that deeply, we would not insist on my depression. We would not hang on to the states of suffering. That doesn't mean we turn the back and don't attend to it at all or run away. No, it's just the quality of attitude. We see it. It is there. We recognize it. But we don't identify and make it something which belongs to me, which is me. So if you find yourself in future in such forms of attachment, think of the foolish monkey. You are in that moment the same one. The force of attachment holds us. So I think we can go to the third truth of Buddha's enlightenment, the end of suffering. That is the truth who tells us there is an end. We don't need to suffer. We don't need to lead a life in this bondage, which prevents us to really realize ourselves. There is a possibility, and that is a state of nirvana. And that is a state which lies beyond mind-body process. That is to say, it is beyond pain. It is such a realized mind, such a great mind, which sees it all but is not affected by it all, at all. That then there is, in that mind, there is a cool, there is a peace, there is a release. There is no question, there is not set. It is the mind of total understanding. The mind which has put down the burden, which is not attached. And that's nice for us, perhaps, to see, to differentiate, or to think of two kinds of nibbana, of realizing, realized state, unconditioned state. The first one is a sort of momentary nibbana. That is the freedom, the burdenless, or the freedom from hatred and from anger, from greed, from defilement. That is what can, however, happen each moment when we are able to let this burden down. It's a momentary enlightenment. where we are free from all these attachments, where the fires in the mind are put out from moment to moment. Just think of your practice this afternoon, where we were experiencing, with the help of movement, with the help of concentration and attentiveness, there were moments where you were free from all that, where there was a lightness, where was no bother, where you were maybe even feeling that you could accept everything as it is, where you were in right state of mind, where you could solve your problems in a cool and in an objective way, without even seeing it perhaps as a problem. So every moment of such freedom is a moment of enlightenment, is a moment of cool, is a moment of peace. And that's why this practice is so wonderful. It allows us to give us a little taste for a second, sometimes for a little longer, on different levels or different maybe degrees of freedom are there to maybe to see too. But this practice does give us this. We don't need to wait and to just drive through and practice hard and gloomy. And just wait until someone, someday, there will come our relief. Until then, little reliefs come each moment. The delight of the concentrated mind can be experienced from moment to moment. Now, the other Nibbana, the second Nibbana, that has not the quality of change anymore. It is not a temporary, a momentary release. That is a release from all which is steady, which is beyond the mind-body process altogether. It is the total ending of our suffering, of our bondage, of our enclosure, and it doesn't change anymore. It is constant. You don't go back and forth. You don't need to work toward it. It is a mind which is constant, all embracing whatever is there, without the ties of attachment, without the ties of involvement, with total clarity, with all-embracing compassion and understanding. This Third Noble Truth is the experience indicated by the Buddha when he simply says that there is no higher happiness than peace of mind. Very simply said, it is the end of suffering, of our dissatisfaction, of our striving. Now, the Fourth Noble Truth is the way. And it is the way we were speaking about the other day. That is the path of balance. It is the guidance for the practice to cut loose from this wheel of samsara, to cut loose from the condition of suffering, from the we recognize the cause of suffering, is middle path. is a path, a guidance between the extremes. It's a path which deals with reality, which is not based on belief, which is not based on any miracles. It is just a very plain, natural unfolding, which is, as it unfolds, or as we practice, a tremendous enrichment and enhancement of our lives. In fact, it becomes the natural unfolding, our life. That's why it is called middle path. So the first noble truth, the truth of Buddha's enlightenment, dukkha, has, or the sub about the unsatisfactoriness of the condition of life, has to be realized. Now, we may all say, yes, sure, I know that, but not deep enough, not really deep enough, where we come to really understand within our mind-body process, yeah, there in these interactions, in these energies, are contained the condition of suffering. So it has to be realized very deeply, the first noble truth. And the second one, of the cause, has to be understood. And each time we are hearing it, each time we are practicing, we understand a little bit more of this force of attachment, of tanha. We begin to understand even